Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our virtual meeting. It is 10 a.m. on March the 8th, 2020, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners.
Commissioner Olson, can you just confirm it's 2022, not 2020?
Well, I'd rather have 2020 because I'd be younger.
Thank you.
I apologize. March 8th, 2022, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Toni Olson, Board President, and in accordance with the Governor's Proclamation 2028-15, we are holding meetings remotely. I have with me this morning Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, Vice President, Commissioner Sid Logan, Secretary, Ann Spangler, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board, and Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. And please remember to mute your devices when not speaking. This session is for the Board and the CEO General Manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. If there is time, if there is public that wishes to comment, and if there is time, and if there is time, and time remains, 15 minutes will be allowed at the end of the briefing for the session. I'm going to now go on to agenda item one, our manager briefing and study session. And a note for this morning, Commission and Executive Services Director Melissa Collins will be facilitating the discussion this morning. I turn it over to you, Melissa.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
First up, we have Julie Cunningham with our media update. Morning, Julie. Oh, you're on mute.
That's so rare for me. Be muted. Good morning, commissioners. Commissioner Olson, I'm with you on the younger thing on 2020.
I'm sorry.
But I don't know that I'd want to repeat the last 2 years.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, actually, neither would I, but okay. Yeah.
They've been doozies. So, but we're roaring right into 2022 with, you know, some of the same sorts of problems. The first thing I thought I'd bring you up to date on is our envelope shortage. We have managed to get quite a bit of media on it, happily, since we've wanted to get word out on that. We've had it in the Herald, the Everett Post has carried it, My Edmonds News, My Everett News, and NWPPA. And we have envelopes now. So thanks to a lot of work by, oh my gosh, we are full of so many good, clever, ambitious employees here at the district and a lot of scurrying. We have managed to get envelopes at least through probably the next several months. And hopefully then our vendor, Senveo, will kick back in and be able to provide them. But these are not envelopes coming from them. We've had to be creative in how we have managed to get them. The most creative we've been about it is this month, where if you recall, we had to send out our own paper that we use for our bill stuffer, The Wire, and have it made into envelopes by a local print shop. So we don't have for the first time in my history here at the district, we don't have an insert in our bill this month. It is just strictly online. So if you know of anyone looking for news about the utility, we have posted it online and it does go out in our e-version to many of our customers. But we've promoted this on social media, on our website. John has done a new customer message that is also on our website. And we're having success in getting some of our customers to go paperless. We're at almost 4,000 that have switched over since the middle of September. I think that's a respectable number. And about half of those have used the $5 coupon. So we're getting a win on both sides because we get more energy savings and they save a little bit of money. So happy about how that is going and feeling relief in that. I think we're going to be okay with it. Feel better once we get a commitment from Senveo that we're back in the envelope business. And this is a tumultuous world right now we're in. So We intend to continue our paperless billing campaign for a couple of months. So then in other news that's been being covered, our work on the IRP got some coverage as well. It was in Clearing Up, APPA, and My Everett News all covered the work we're doing with our IRP. And last month, John's podcast with APPA was released, and you can listen to that on the APPA website. Our base charge rate increase is coming up now. April 1st is on the horizon, and we've been talking about that in our own publications, and it also has been covered by the Snohomish Tribune, My Edmonds News, and My Everett News. So getting some coverage on the changes that are coming to that. Our Herald column this month has been on energy hogs, the things in your home that use the most energy, and talking about ways to reduce your energy use. And that will also be the topic for Power Talks, April Power Talks. Hillary Olson will be talking on ways to save energy in your home, going through the tips from free to some of the different things we can offer to our customers. And let's see, I had one more that I wanted to share. Oh, and Rob Beiler helped us with a story in the Safe Start publication on our own Safe Start program that we've been doing. So lots and lots of good things happening. Oh, and one more thing that's on the horizon, the Everett Herald is working on a story on Mesa too. I just want you to have a heads up that is a story that's being heavily researched by that reporter presently. So we are anticipating a story later in the month on Mesa 2. That's it from me. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Next, we have Clark McIsaac for our legislative report. Good morning, Clark.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, commissioners. Good morning. Hope everyone's doing well today. We've rounded third and are in the home stretch. Legislatively, we've got 2.5 days left in the regular session this year. So clock is ticking, but there's still a lot of moving pieces in play. So like normal, I'd like to touch on kind of just a process check. I'll go a little bit more into details where we're at the legislative level, and then run through the key state legislation report. As always, please jump in with any questions, comments you have throughout the way. So process-wise, again, we have just a couple of days left in the regular session. We're largely in the stage now, process-wise, where legislators are in the middle of negotiations and kind of fine-tunings and tweaks to the supplemental budgets. Details on those updates and kind of where the House and Senate have negotiated common paths forward is anticipated soon. We don't have full details just yet. The same can be said at this point for the transportation package. Again, you'll recall the transportation package is separate and distinct from the transportation budget. The last we know of the current proposal of the transportation package is more or less a 16-year, $16 billion revenue and expenditure proposal, expecting kind of some fine tunings and tweaks on revenue mechanisms as well as projects and expenditure items looking ahead, but don't quite have those details just yet. And there are still some bills kind of in the works and in the moves in their fiscal committees, which is, it's not completely out of the norm, but again, with just 2.5 days left, that's a lot of work for some of those bills to go through. So again, turn the corner in the last couple of days, and it'll be a very interesting and exciting few days left here. So jumping into the key state legislation report, starting on page 9 of your packet, we have House Bill 1767. This is a targeted electrification bill. I believe almost immediately after our last commission meeting, but for the last couple of weeks, this bill has been deemed dead for this session. The opposition was substantial enough to stop this, at least this bill as it is for this session. Do anticipate this is a pretty big and significant issue for the proponents of this bill at the legislative level and as well as in the governor's office. So expect discussions around targeted electrification to likely bleed into the interim and perhaps result in something looking towards next year, another bill, for example, is something we can see. But for now, in the remainder of this session, this bill is deemed dead. Moving on to page 10, we have Senate Bill 5803. This is the utility wildfire mitigation plan bill. It kind of had various different versions of it earlier, but ultimately resulted in a very good and productive bill. I believe largely just due to kind of some competing interests and budgetary needs as well. This bill actually has also been deemed dead for this session as well. There is a very slight possibility we could see something of this pop up in the budget. Again, with the last couple of days, things kind of move and pop up unexpectedly, but at least for what we're aware of, the bill itself is deemed dead for this moment. Again, also expecting interim work and some sort of efforts looking into next session as well, because there was such a productive and mm-hmm. beneficial discussion and process that was put forward.
There's a lot happening on this topic nationwide, region-wide. It needs to happen for sure. So,
yeah, and I would agree with that, Commissioner. And frankly, you know, the death sounds like an extreme word, but you know, the death of this bill was met with a lot of disappointment from a lot of utilities as well, who worked really hard to find mm-hmm. something that actually would result in you know, something productive and effective in helping mitigate at least utility related or the potential for utility related wildfires. So yeah, certainly disappointed here, but looking forward to continuing the good work. And there's nothing also with this bill not passing, there's nothing stopping utilities from pursuing their own wildfire mitigation plans like our good team has done as well. So, you know, there are positives there as well. Mm-hmm. Looking ahead to page 11, we have House Bill 1623. This rolled in just kind of the issue of rolling blackouts or the concern for and potential for rolling blackouts into some sort of ongoing discussions. This bill has run through the process with broad support, and at this point has been delivered to the governor and is awaiting his signature. So it's been passed through the legislature and is just awaiting that last final step with the governor's signature. Moving on to page 12 of the packet, we have House Bill 1770. This is a bill regarding energy codes. It had kind of two different pieces to it. Despite the fact that this bill was amended pretty significantly since we last spoke, kind of to soften it and really focus on the stretch code piece of this bill, it is now deemed dead at this point.
Oh.
And this bill, like the targeted electrification bill, just because they're in the building decarbonization sort of arena, if you want to call it that, both saw pretty substantial pushback from opponents.
What is the REACH code? Residential reach code, is that something technical in the electrical code or?
Yeah, so what it allows for, Commissioner, at least in this context and generally, reach code would kind of allow, if you want to say, a plan B. So there would be this state building code, which would have its own sort of requirements. And then a reach code would generally be one other option that a municipality or whatever the right entity would be could mm-hmm. take to kind of extend beyond those. So it perhaps adopt stricter sort of requirements. In this instance, codes that would lead likely towards either less energy use or greenhouse gas emissions.
Thank you.
Page 13, we have House Bill 1814. This is the community solar bill. This bill is been amended to expand funding, system size, and it addresses some specifics on contracting as well. This is one of the bills I somewhat alluded to earlier on. It is still working through the process. It is in its fiscal committee in the Senate. So it's a House bill. It's almost entirely through its committee process, but does have to go through that as well as a floor debate, potential amendment and passage, and then reconciliation because the Senate has a slightly different bill than what the House put forward. So it's just an agreement upon what the two chambers pass if this bill gets there, We are still working on just kind of some small technical tweaks. It's still a bill that we support, but would like to see just a few bit more areas where we can kind of clean it up a little bit, make it a slightly better bill than it is now. And we do expect to see those soon. Page 14 of the packet, we have House Bill 1117, Net Ecological Gain. This bill, since we last connected, was amended, but despite that, at this point is deemed dead and is not continuing through the process. Those amendments, just for what it's worth noting, didn't quite touch on some of our remaining concerns, one of which largely was just trying to put some sort of sideboard, on what this bill would actually look like, what the term net ecological gain would mean before entering into potential rulemaking. Again, would this bill have passed through the legislature and become law? Of course, salmon issues being of significant importance to the legislature, to the governor, and generally to the state, expect, be it this issue or just general salmon issues, to continue in discussions throughout the legislative arena. Moving on to page 15, we have House Bill 1918, reducing emissions from outdoor equipment. This bill, despite when we reported this, or when I submitted this report last week, was deemed dead. Out of the ashes, this bill has been resurrected and is continuing to run through the process again, which is quite interesting and quite unexpected. It's worth noting that our concerns, we're just making sure that our vegetation management teams and folks or contractors, whoever's really doing our vegetation management projects, as well as emergency response. So say the folks in the field going out to respond to a downed tree in the middle of a storm, that they had the access to the tools that they needed, whatever the technology is, just as long as they were able to do the job safely, efficiently, quickly, and effectively. Our concerns were addressed in the amended bill, which was then amended again to just actually change this bill solely to a tax incentive, or more or less some sort of an incentive program for zero emissions outdoor equipment. So again, one way or the other, our previous concerns and interests had been addressed both directly and then again through the second amendment indirectly as well. So again, this bill is moving forward to the best that we could tell. It still has some process to move ahead, but has, again, since we submitted this report, started moving, which is quite interesting. Page 16 of the packet, we have House Bill 1056 regarding open public meeting notice requirements during declared emergencies. This bill itself is considered dead for this session. However, the content of it has largely been picked up and dropped into another bill, which was also from last session, which hadn't successfully passed, which is in the next page of the packet, House Bill 1329, which largely regarded just accessibility to open public meetings. And so House Bill 1329, with its previous content, as well as largely the content of 1056, those two merged, is moving ahead at this point in time. And trying to recall, it has passed the legislature at this point as well. So I think it's just awaiting signature from the two leads of the chambers and then on to Governor Inslee for his signature at this point.
Clark, I know that it's important for you to be really succinct in under the principles, but I do think there are other benefits besides just being able to hold a public meeting, and for sure that, but I think there are other benefits too. If you consider that local means our customers, our voters, you know, the public, there are benefits in other ways, in addition to the being able to meet during a declared emergency. So anyway, just wanted to, I thought about that as I was reading this, and thank you.
Yeah, understood, Commissioner, and fair point. And I would actually maybe say that the ability for, if I'm understanding your point, for the public to kind of engage in these processes is sort of rolled into into that principal review.
Under local, yeah, local control, yeah.
This is Commissioner Olson. I need some clarification. Mm-hmm. Emergency. Would the last 2 years, would this have applied to the last 2 years since the governor issued a proclamation?
Yeah, if I'm recalling correctly, the intent and effect of this bill around the term emergency would not require for us, the utility, to wait for an executive order authorizing that, you know, because we've been kind of operating under that executive order more or less underneath the emergency order. Mm-hmm. This would kind of allow, if you want to say, like a light switch to be flipped when that emergency order were to go into effect, that then the board would be able to meet remotely, clearly with at least the clear authority to move ahead.
So I have a second part. Mm-hmm. Looking back over the past 2 years, does that mean that a public board couldn't adopt some kind of a hybrid schedule? Is it either one or the other?
Do you mean during an emergency situation or outside?
The last 2 years have been an emergency. Mm-hmm. And when that proclamation ends, we declare an emergency. And so an in-person meeting is required in all other instances. I guess I'm not being clear. Once this last 2 years is behind us, our declarations of emergency tend to be storms, or now we're dealing with supply chain. So is that the window in which the board could elect to do this?
Yes. Yeah.
That narrow definition.
Yeah, from my understanding, it would meet that. And it's not a requirement mm-hmm. that the board would have to meet remote, but rather that if
we
it
the
helped
option.
The board, yeah, to function, that it had the option to.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
For my key state legislation report, that's the end of the bills I have. I'm happy to answer any other questions on these bills or related or on process, but again, touching on, we've got just a couple of days until sine die, until the legislature ultimately ends at least its regular session. What happens the next couple of days, especially regarding a transportation package, could or could not mean that the state ends up in a special session. Totally uncertain at this point. 2.5 days is a short amount of time and a lot of time at the same in the same breath for a lot of work to get done. So looking forward to reporting on kind of the coming days in closing of the legislature. And then one thing I do want to note as far as our reporting, once the legislature is within a 5-day window of sine die, the governor has 20 days, which are mostly business plus Saturdays, to sign bills or veto or section veto. So there's going to be a little bit of uncertainty for the next about 2.5 weeks or so on some of the last bills that funnel through, including budgets as well. So there might be a little bit of gap in reporting, at least on finality of some of these things, but we will follow up once we know for certain what everything looks like once the legislature's come to a close, at least with regular session.
Great job. Thank you, Clark.
Thank you.
Really appreciate what you do.
Thank you, Clark. Good report.
Thank you, Clark.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Brad Spangler, who's going to give us a presentation on the Jackson Powerhouse Tenant Improvements 2022. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, staff.
Morning.
Am I showing up? How about that? For those of you who have been out to the Jackson Powerhouse, you know that it was built in 1980s with 1970s technology, and it was very compartmentalized. And originally it was sized for 6 people. There was a superintendent, there was 1 engineer, and there were 4 operators that maintained the project. Since that time, We've gone from a system that has incorporated number of generations, small g, of control changes. There's now a SCADA system. There are security monitoring systems throughout. And we've also picked up Woods Creek and Young's Creek and Hancock and Callaghan. And we've gone from 6 employees out there to 13. And so there is very, very little room. And as we are now adding Qualco and other projects, and because the level of detail with the new license requires more activity, there are more people coming and going. And the little segmented, cramped spaces that we had of a little engineer's office and so forth are no longer adequate. The SCADA systems that we have out there are stuffed, literally stuffed into 2 closets. You have to be very skinny to get to some of the wiring in back. Basically, this doesn't allow for a good operating system. Let's see if I can. It looks like I'm not able to control Allison. I wonder if you can help me by advancing to the next slide.
If you click on that first page of the presentation and then use your arrow keys, you should be able to navigate through it.
Unfortunately, I'm using an iPad, not a PC.
Okay, that may be the problem. Jenny, do you mind going through the presentation for Brad? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next slide. So we engaged an architect to do some programming for us, and they've indicated that renovation to give us the room that we need for up to 17 people inside that existing footprint is feasible. In the past, the commission has authorized the design, which is now complete. We've submitted to the county and we've got building permits in hand. You can see from the photo, we have some temporary offices, which will soon have handicapped ADA accessible ramps to them, because those will be temporary offices for our engineers, and we have a separate trailer for our control infrastructure and admin staff that will be fully outfitted and approved by the county. We have a new mezzanine which was constructed. Those 2 cramped closets now became about, I want to say 200 square feet of new IT space, and that's the lower picture that you see there are the new IT racks up above a new office area. So we've also been working the last couple of years on some new general conditions for our public works contracts. You may recall in the past that our Linwood contract had some problems with a contractor who was taking advantage of some of our contract requirements that didn't give us the teeth that we really needed. So now we have new general conditions, and this will be the first project that will actually use those new general conditions for the public works contract. And I have full faith and confidence in contracts and purchasing and the people that help put that together, that it will be a step in the right direction. Next slide. Yes, Commissioner.
Oh, do I look like, yeah, I was. I don't want to hit us down anything off our topic, but I would just like, I'm curious, and you could follow up with commissioners in writing or whatever. I'm curious about the changes that have been made, because it sounds in our, I guess, our specs or our boilerplate contract to improve our ability to manage the project. So I'm just curious about it. I don't need an answer today.
I'm happy to take that one for action and work with contracts and purchasing and put together some bullet points that explain the upgrades to the new boilerplate up front.
And commissioners, I ask you, are you interested in this information as well?
I am.
Sure. Thank you. I don't want anything long. I just want bullet points.
We can put together some easy talking points to answer that.
101 for Tony. Okay.
So this shows you the 1984 office layout for the Jackson Powerhouse. You can see that highlighted area was the office for the 6 people. Much of the rest of the areas were used for, there was a segmented lunchroom, but a lot of the other areas were not as usable as for office space. Next slide. So in the 1990s, you can see that big blue square to the upper left. That was actually an in-house construction project, or it might have been contracted, where we added some square footage to the control room area, and we incorporated a corridor into a couple of closets. And so now we have engineers in the area to the lower right, but that will no longer fit the two engineers originally. 200 engineers were in that originally, and now we've got four. In the upper left, that was the crew area. Originally, that was for six, and now we have eight plus. And that little box that you see up in the center, that's actually a closet for, but it's become an office because we didn't have any place else for one of our SCADA programmers to work. So this is inadequate according to facilities requirements. And therefore they said, we need to look at doing something else. Our programming actually looked at building something off-site up on the top of the knob as you come around and did the Jackson project. But it was about $2+ million to build something. And it really doesn't give us the functionality that we need because it's not part of the powerhouse. People who are disconnected from the powerhouse are also communicatively disconnected. They're not going to be as functional as having somebody right there in the footprint. So the next slide will show you, this is the area that as the renovation is built. That large area to the upper left is for engineers and the superintendent. The large area to the right is crew and admin area. And then we still have a rebuilt kitchenette, a larger lunch area, just a greater use of the existing footprint because it's 16 feet from the floor up to the top deck. We're actually taking advantage of that. The next slide. Advance one, there we go. This is our furniture layout. So you can see all of the room that we've got available. You'll see in that right-hand block that there are some table and chairs in there. That actually allows us, and those are all movable. There's an overhead projector and a drop-down screen, allows us to use that for a training area and meeting space for up to 20 people. We cannot do anything more than 12 with a shoehorn in the existing lunchroom in there. We have to use the brown building off-site, which is not a heated space and not conducive for year-round training, but we've had to use that. This is going to be a great improvement from both a space effectiveness standpoint as well as a security and safety standpoint. Next slide, Jenny. The blue line that you see around the perimeter of this office area is a reincorporated 3-hour fire separation between the offices and the industrial area. That was thought of and mostly put in place, but never really, it's not currently a secure space. It's not, there's no fire integrity between the two spaces. This job will also ensure that we have that fire separation between the industrial spaces and the office space. There's also acoustical panels and a sound masking system that are proposed with this so that it makes the office areas much more, much easier to work in. You don't have that same constant low frequency hum of the generators coming through. And because we have these 16-foot ceilings, we're able to put some spaces above the 8-foot height. The next slide will show us the mezzanines. Well, I'm sorry, go back one. I might have missed a slide somehow. It might have dropped out. But the areas that are highlighted in the upper right and that you see shaded about in the center, those are mezzanine spaces that are going to be built by the contractor. And the areas with the four blocks, those are the four IT racks that are already constructed on the upper left. So we've added square footage by putting those mezzanine spaces for mechanical and IT up and out of the areas. And we've also improved the restrooms and made them more functional and We also have a dumbwaiter that will allow us to take equipment and records from the lower floor to the upper floor without walking with boxes up and down the stairs, because you don't have your 3 points of contact with the stairwell. And so there's chances of slips, trips, and falls. So we're eliminating that with a dumbwaiter. Great improvements all around. Now next slide, Jenny. There we go. Here is our tentative schedule. Assuming that we've got our Jackson shutdown that's gonna start on the 11th, 10th, 11th, later this week actually, and run for about 3 weeks. On conclusion of that, we'll be able to move into those top deck offices. We'll advertise, slight modification there. It's gonna be March 23rd, but the bid date is still April 14th. We'd come back to the board for approval of, assuming that we've got good bids, it could be as soon as the 3rd of May, and give a contractor notice to proceed, give them 210 days, and get to substantial completion in 2022. Give them 60 days for final completion to get totally off-site. There's a lot to disassemble for their trailers and cleanup and so forth. And we wanna give them enough time to make sure it's all cleaned out, get all the furniture in the new spaces and completely move in by April of 2023. So it's about a year from now. You'll also note that because it's a concrete building, first responder radios don't reach inside. And so we're going to also be installing, we have a design and installing a first responder radio system that will allow somebody outside the powerhouse to talk to somebody inside the powerhouse when they're in their full gear and they've got, and they're trying to find somebody or put out a fire or resolve an incident. There is communication, which is part of safety. We also have some upgrades that we need to do to the existing elevator, but that doesn't have to be done before the powerhouse renovation. We've got pricing, we've got contract specs, and so we're ready to do that in 2023 or beyond. So it is it's a huge improvement for the working area, for the working environment in the powerhouse. Great benefits for that allow us to grow into the additional tasks that we need to. If we take on additional generation projects, I believe that if they're modest enough, the existing staff can continue to work inside this footprint. You know, it's been 35 years since we've had an upgrade. I believe that.
Just thinking about that. Yeah.
It's been a long time. From concrete block walls to actually some gypsum board and paint. It'll be all right.
Still keep the Cold War look of the instrumentation.
We are keeping the switchboard. That's right. It's not the seafoam green. It is is mustard yellow.
Oh, I was thinking of the seafoam green. Okay.
This is Commissioner Olson. I did have a question on the schedule. It looks like work will continue into December. Have you anticipated that there might be weather conditions that would need to be interrupted?
So because this is all inside work.
Okay.
And we don't really have any outside work. And because the access in and out of the powerhouse is through the hatches in the industrial area.
Okay.
And we do that 12 months a year anyway.
Okay. And, I was thinking contractor getting materials and stuff in. If there's 10 feet of snow, I don't want to belabor it, but I was just thinking the ground conditions and everything, depending upon snowfall, can get pretty hairy. So
the schedule is relatively ideal for this kind of work.
Oh, really?
Because the contractor will be working on demolition in the early stage where water getting in through the hatch doesn't really matter. And by the time he gets to studs and drywall and flooring and painting, it's actually going to be the summer months. And so there'll be, the contractor to work much better. And he'll be working on the finish details with everything buttoned up and dry in the later months. So if they can accelerate this schedule, they certainly are capable of doing that. And with the potential, and a knock on wood, that we don't have another variant come through, the contractor may easily be able to find ways of accelerating this and be out of there faster.
This is Tony again, third question. Again, the utility-wide, there are supply chain issues. Given this kind of work, are you anticipating that might also be for the remodel?
The type of work that we're doing is relatively straightforward: drywall, metal studs, flooring. Talking to suppliers and talking to the architect, we're not anticipating any issues.
Okay.
If there are problems, say with a dumbwaiter system or with other specialty type items, those are not critical, honestly, and they could be put on a separate schedule and still be completed.
Okay. Yeah,
we can still get to substantial completion with an exception.
Okay, thank you.
Great question.
Well, the only thing else, my final parting shot is, how many years has this been on the shelf? I'm so glad that you're finally getting to it. It's for a number of reasons. It's not the desire was to do this, but I'm really, really pleased that you're moving forward on it.
That's a simple answer. It was always going to follow the Jackson shutdown. And the shutdown was originally planned for 2020. March of 2020, which is when the pandemic hit, and it had to be delayed until 21.
Yeah.
And now 22, it's executed. So we had a 2-year delay.
Yeah.
But for good reason.
I meant overall, Brad, over the years, it just didn't fit into the budget, and it didn't, you know, you all knew it needed to be done a long time ago. And now we have the opportunity to do it. And I think that's great.
And I have to give a shout out to facilities and to IT and telecom, because they've been great about helping us get everything cut over and out of that existing SCADA closet. We have 35 years of wiring that we're trying to disassemble and reconnect while the plant is still in operation. So they're actually going to be doing some of the final cutovers while the plant is out of service. So this shutdown is actually well-timed to help out with this planning.
That's a good thing.
And I've got just a couple of questions. I don't remember the answer to the first one, but I think I knew it at one time. Is this facility staffed 24 hours a day?
It is not. We have a control system that we schedule power and schedule our ramping rates and so forth, so that it can automatically change generation. But it's pretty much a base load facility, so it does not require a 24-hour operator.
Yeah. And the last one, I assume this project already is in the budget for this year that we approved.
It is.
Okay, great. Thank you.
A pleasure. Some of it has rolled over from last year, but there is some additional funding this year, and it is fully funded.
Well, this is Commissioner Wolf. I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. Number one, it's a very interesting artistic illustration that you've put in here. And I'm studying it because I think I'm learning more about Jackson. You know, I've never been there yet. With all of the first year that you had a big event there, it was our vacation time. It was, I guess, couldn't make it the first time, and then COVID. So anyway, I almost need captions to some of this, but no, I think that thing up on the very top, that yellow thing that looks like, it looks like an animal in steel.
That's the gantry crane that's on the top of the powerhouse.
And what is it?
Everything that's inside the powerhouse has gone in or come out using that gantry crane. That was used for the original, it was part of the original construction, but it was also used to assemble the generators and then to install all the pumps. Even the little models that we take in and out to go to presentations at schools and public events come in and out using that gantry crane.
Is that Y-A-N-C-Y, Yancy?
G-A-N-T-R-Y, gantry.
Oh, gantry, like Elmer.
The same.
Okay, well, anyway, I wanted to comment that I think you've done great planning on this. And so in your design is so economical in terms of space. What you're doing with, you know, the mezzanine and all of that is just really impressive. Thank you.
The architect gets the credit for much of that. We came in and brought them and they got to see the space available. Mm-hmm. And figured out what our requirements were. And they came up with three proposals in the programming section. And we presented that to facilities, presented that to the crew out there. And they were the ones actually who said, this is the one that makes the most sense.
Great. I was wondering, well, Commissioner Logan asked you about 24-hour coverage. And so I was thinking if somebody needed to stay there, do you have cots and things for people?
If we know that somebody needs to come and stay, they bring their motor home or their trailer and they'll pull it up on site and they've got some more comforts of home.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
My pleasure.
This is Jason, AGM of the Facilities Generation Power Rates and Transmission Groups. And, you know, Brad gives a lot of credit to the architect, but he deserves a lot of credit here. He has done a great job of pulling this project together. And even when we were hit with the pandemic and had to delay it, you know, he moved forward with the mezzanine piece, which was a very good decision. That mezzanine is now complete and, you know, equipment is moved up there and it's, you know, a nice new open area for that equipment to be up there and really opened up a lot of space. So I want to give him some credit. He's done an excellent job and, you know, I'm glad he's leading us through this project and it is going to be a great improvement for everyone who's working up there and the Jackson crew.
Well said, Jason.
I'm looking forward to a field trip at some point.
Yeah, because you'll get to see all the new stuff.
Yeah.
So, Melissa, do we have any other presentations to come before us this morning?
That is everything for this morning.
Okay. And it looks like we clearly have time for public comment. If Allison, we have anyone in the queue.
Take a peek. I do not see any hands currently raised.
All right.
Oh, it looks like we do have one now.
All right.
Gayla Shoemake.
Good morning, Gayla.
Good morning, commissioners. Good to see you all there. I just have a question about the Lower Snake Dams. You mentioned that in your last meeting, and I did look up some information about it, and apparently the senators and the governor have said that there's going to be a solution by the 31st of July. And I know that you guys were going to set up a workshop so that those of us in the community would have an opportunity to really get informed about it. And I'm just worried that if we don't get that set up soon, it's going to be too late. And that we're not going to really have any impact on that. So I guess I'm just asking, do you have one set up? And if so, is it going to be soon enough so that we can really get, you know, give feedback and understand the situation?
Go ahead, Melissa. Thank you.
I was going to see if Kim Johnston was on, if she could pop on for a second. There she is. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. I can't give a hard date at this specific moment in time, but I can tell you that time is of the essence. We are aware and we are trying to get that scheduled as soon as possible to align with the staff work that needs to be done in preparation for that. So more to come.
Okay, thanks very much. And if you can let me know as soon as you know that, I can get information out to all of our groups. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We'll do that. We will do that, Gayla.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, it is now 10:50 a.m. and the board will recess our meeting this morning, and we will reconvene in the remote format at 1:30 p.m. So we are in recess. Thank you.